And remember, as you're turning there, I'm not going to spend a lot of time in introductory this morning because I want to get into the passage. There's a ton of stuff happening there. But remember, Paul's letter to the Romans was written to a church that had not been established by an apostle. Therefore, Paul writes this letter to the church to establish apostolic doctrine. And that's why we're going back and we're taking a long, hard, in-depth, challenging look at this letter, because it's the basis by which all that we believe is built upon. This one letter here explains it all. Not at the exclusion of other writings in the New Testament, of course, but this is where the foundation is built. And we've come to this letter because as a church, as a society, as a culture, even as Americans, the church itself is going to go through some growing pains here as the days move forward. And as I've said so many times, God begins to shake the tree. And the fruit then or at least we think is fruit, tends to happen to fall from the tree. So we better find out what it is that we believe. And so that's what this letter is about. So as we looked at this now, we said that the overall theme of the book of Romans, from our perspective and for our purposes, is the righteousness of Christ. This is all about Him. It always has been. It always will be. It's about Jesus Christ. That's the point. That's the purpose, okay? And we looked at those first 17 verses there, and we looked at God's righteousness, which was revealed, and that ultimately the revelation of the righteousness of God is clearly seen, it's identified, it's understood in the gospel. That's what it is. The gospel declares the glory of God. And that's, of course, verse 16. We saw that. I'm not ashamed, Paul said, of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto everyone that believes, right? We looked at those verses and we talked about those. So we see and understand that the gospel is significant. And then in verse 17, Paul says that for in it, the gospel, God's righteousness is revealed from faith to faith, okay? And then when we started our journey now in verse 18, everything changed there. You can see we moved from verse 17 to verse 18 from God's wrath, a righteousness being revealed, to God's wrath being revealed. And of course, the section heading of this, all the way through the latter part there of chapter 3, is that of sin. Now we looked last week, at God's wrath, first of all, is revealed against all ungodliness. Now remember, we're going to take a brief glance at those verses. Actually, we're not going to take a brief glance, but you'll know them from last week. Verse 17 and 18, and Paul says in verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed against two things, all ungodliness, number one, and unrighteousness. In verses 20 or 18 to 23, he's dealing with the idea of ungodliness. And we've taken some time to understand what this idea of ungodliness means. The idea of ungodliness is basically a rejection of who God is. Okay, and you can see that there. It's the rejecting of his attributes. Because God has made himself known. He's made himself known in creation. He's made himself known in so many different ways that it's obvious to any that will look and receive. But obviously, man doesn't want to do that. And so the idea of ungodliness is man's attempt to get God out of the picture. So the first thing you have to do is reject who God is. And that's what we looked at last week. Now let's take a look at this. Not only that, but it's also God's wrath is revealed against ungodliness. And this is the second part now of this. And it's rejecting his authority. Who he is God. What he is God, I should say. Who he is his attributes. What he is his authority. I want to read these verses and then we're going to pray and ask God to bless this. Verse 21, because, now remember, in some of your versions you can note that the idea of because here, you can see in the New King James it appears to be starting sort of something new, but in other versions it stops, and that's why I broke it there. So I believe this is really sort of a new beginning. In other words, period at verse 20 and then start here. Because, Paul says, because God has made all these things known. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God. And they weren't even thankful, but they became futile in their thoughts. And because of that, their foolish hearts were darkened. And professing to be wise, they became fools. And what do fools do? Well, they change the glory of God, the glory of the incorruptible God, into an image made like corruptible man. What? Birds. What types of images? Birds, four-footed animals, and creeping things. Those things that we had climbing all over our house, sleeping with us at night, in our shorts, in our shoes, while we lived 5 years in Belize. Creeping things. We know all about creeping things. Trust me. Now let's pray and ask God to bless our study. Now, powerful words here. Now let's take a look at this a little bit closer. because although they knew God. Now, what's happening here, like I said, there's a break in this, I believe. But what Paul is doing is he's taking us back to the statements that were made before. And remember what we said there in verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who do what? Do you remember? They suppress the truth. The idea of suppressing the truth, we took some time to look at this, is not someone that's unaware of or doesn't know anything about the truth. The idea of suppressing is the idea of holding down. You can't hold something down that you don't know exists. So these people that Paul is dealing with here, both within the church and without, are people that have received the truth because God has made the truth available, and yet they've taken that truth, and as truth always does, it exposes the errors within our life, right? Just like light exposes darkness, it actually expels darkness. And what they've done is they've taken that truth and they've said no, and they've taken it and they've pressed it down. They've held it down. So the reason God's wrath is revealed is because mankind has taken the truth of God and has pushed it down. And then Paul goes on in those other verses to talk about, because what can be made of known of God, God has made known. And we looked at Psalm 19 there. Just one passage of Scripture that clearly identifies where God is. Do you remember that? It's one of my favorite Psalms. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmaments show His handiwork. Every day they speak about God's glory, and there's no place on earth where their voice isn't heard. So that ultimately Paul says, there's no excuse. There's no defense to anybody that stands before God and says, well, gee, I didn't know. God said, did you ever look at the sky? Well, sure. But up in the sky, you know, well, this is the stars. We learn, you know, I learned that astrology to lead my day and stuff like that. No, that's not why I put the stars up there. See? So there's not going to be any excuse. Because the heavens themselves, according to Psalm 19, verses 1 to 4, speak every single day without fail. From the day God spoke them into existence until June 7th, 2009. They continue to speak, do they not? No one has been able to silence them. No one has been able to, there's been a perversion attempted to twist them and to make them something that they were never intended to be. But the sky itself reveals the glory of God. And so Paul ultimately includes, look, and this shows, Paul says, God's divine nature, who He is in His character, in His Godhood. There's nobody that can deny this. Oh, they try. And this is why we come up with all of our theories about space and about all of these other things and the cosmos and blah, 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 and it goes on and on. Why? Because you got to suppress the truth. The truth is in front of you. It identifies a God. Because what that shows us is that there's something, someone way, way bigger than that. Otherwise, that couldn't even exist. But science, of course, does its thing to try to shift all of that away and gives us all of its, you know, things that obviously don't work. But it goes on and on. So this is where the because is. It ties all back to this stuff, you see? In other words, Paul is saying, because or based on what I've just said. And everything I've said, Paul says, although they knew God. They know God. There is no one in this world that has ever drawn breath who does not know. You ever heard the thing, well, what about the person running around over there in the jungle that's never heard? Well, he has the sky, does he not? Absolutely. Why do you think that they worship what we call animistic worship, and they get into spiritism, and they get all of that stuff? Because by looking at the sky and understanding that they can control nothing that's around them, they realize there's something much bigger and broader than they are. So even they are without excuse, because God's creation speaks to them. It does. Every single day. And it can't be silenced. See? So, although, because they knew God. Now, the idea of know here, it's an interesting word, because there's different ones that are used within the New Testament. One seems to speak of an intellectual knowledge, simply to know something about something. But this is the word ginosko. The root is ginosko. That word of knowledge, when you talk about that kind of knowledge, it's not simply the knowing of facts. It's the knowing of something by experience. Very important to understand that. Because what Paul is saying is, because they know God from their experience. How? Psalm 19. Romans chapter 1, just the verse before, because God has made it known. He's there for all to see, any that would choose to look, you see. So because they knew God, these people know who God is. The atheist knows who God is. He just hasn't come to terms with it, doesn't want to admit it. So does the agnostic. Because God has placed that within us, right? Was it Augustine that said, it's within every man that there's a God-shaped vacuum, right? You know what I'm talking about. Was it Augustine? Oh, Pascal. Okay. Yeah. So ask Kenny, the Bible answer man over there. Well, actually, no. Anyway. Yeah. I mean, but you see the point? There's this thing in us that has to recognize something out there bigger than us, right? And man has continuously sought to fill that void with anything. In the old days, before there was really science, as we know science today, it was philosophy. It was the worship of all of these other gods. And we're going to be talking about those, so I don't want to take the time right now. But there's always been something out there. And even today, of course, the intellectual says, well, there is nothing bigger than us. And then they tell us all about science. So what are they ultimately saying about science? That nature is really bigger than the rest of us. See? So even they, whether they'll admit it or not, absolutely recognize something is bigger. So there's this knowledge of God is for all to see. There's no one going to deny that. And I love Paul's word there. Because remember, we said this is like a courtroom setting. The evidence is being presented against those that would hold this position. And believe me, they will stand before the judge, whether they like the idea or they don't. And so Paul is presenting this as a case. And he comes to that last verse there that we looked at last week in verse 20. And it says, so they are without excuse. And we define that as, no, they have no defense. There's no defense. It's simple. It's pulled away from them. The evidence is there for all to see. So because although they knew God, now watch this. Because they choose to suppress the truth, and they take this knowledge of God by experience and they push it off, notice the first thing that they do. Now, here's the two problems with this. This is where it ultimately leads in rejecting his authority. They did not glorify him as God. They knew God, but they chose to say, well, he's nothing more than anything else, so to speak. They brought him, in other words, down to our level. Paul said that was the first mistake. You see, after God has presented the evidence and he lays this stuff all out there, you see, the one thing that they've come to, the conclusion that they've come to in this foolishness, which we're going to see in here in a few minutes, is not only foolish, but the literal word is moronic. It's called stupidity. That's what Paul's saying here. I wonder why the translators didn't actually write it that way. Would have made a lot more sense. Would have smacked people around a little more, wouldn't it? That's what we need. But you see, the problem here is they did not glorify God, notice, as God. Well, they like the idea of a God, because we all like the idea that, again, there's somebody out there. We just like the idea of a God that does our bidding, see, that gives us the home and heals us of our sickness and keeps us safe. That's the kind of God we want. And then when he's done his duty, we say, well, you know what, let's put you back on the shelf. Sound familiar? Let's put you back on the shelf until I need you again, right? And then I'll come running. And of course, this is the mentality of much of the world, in particular of the church in America. And that's why, as a pastor, I get all the time, why didn't God do this? Why didn't God do this? What do you, wait. If God has to do, he's not God, is he? Remember, we all talked about this. We don't need to go back into this. But he always gets the blame. Do you ever notice that? We forget the fact that we want him to do these things because we've decided that this is what his form should look like, right? We all like to point out the fallacy of the quote-unquote religions that make for themselves little images and stuff like that. And we say, oh, those people are wrong. They're worshiping idols and stuff like that. And we forget all about the idol that we've made of God. Because we do the same thing. Remember, don't point the finger. Why? Because it can be pointed right back. And the minute you draw a line in the sand, that's the standard by which you'll be judged, Jesus said. Be careful where you draw the line. In fact, don't even draw a line. That you're safer that way. We're going to see that when we get over there to chapter 2. And Paul says, therefore, as he concludes this entire thing, who are you to judge? And we go, oh, I love that, because then no one can judge me. That's not what he's talking about there. We're going to see, because we like to always say, you can't judge me, brother. That's wrong. Then we forget that 1 Corinthians chapter 5 says, Paul said, are we not supposed to judge those within the body of Christ? Yes. Well, wait a minute. Is there confusion? No, there's not, when you really understand what's going on. We're going to take our time to look at that. But the point is, we like this idea of manipulation. We like the idea that we can have a God that we can mold and shape to fit in whatever we want. Oh, no, we don't draw little statues up and stuff like that, because after all, that's worshiping an image. But we have an image as well, if we're honest with ourselves. And you should be, because you're in church. that our images may not be physical, but they're every bit as idolatrous as those that do. It's easy to look elsewhere, isn't it? Because as long as we can keep the light reflected over there, you know, over there on Mr. Dick, there I can keep the reflection on him. As long as I can keep you guys focused on him, I don't look so bad. I mean, look at him. Nah, man, he's the guy here. See? So I can keep myself hidden. Boy, as long as I can keep everybody's attention diverted to him, I'm going to be okay because no one's going to see me. And we do this all the time, right? And so we make and we shape and we mold and we fix and we make our gods and stuff like that. Man, how dare we look at someone else and say they're wrong for what they do when we are guilty of the same thing? You could stand in the mirror and say that you're not guilty of these things, then go ahead and judge. You've earned the right. But since you can't, and I know you can't because I can't, you get the idea. Anyway, none of us can, let's put it that way. When you stand and look at a man in the mirror, you see a person that needs a lot of help, right? That's why our dependency is on Christ, and not, it better not be on me or on anyone else in this life. It better be on him. So do not glorify him as God. Now immediately, again, this idea of glory. You see, this is what our society has done to us. We think of glory and we think, man, what an arrogant God this is. I will be glorified and I'll share my glory with no one else. Right? This is our God. Right? This is God. That's because that's the mentality we have of God, because that's the way we understand glory. You got this picture of this victorious athlete strolling into the place, and everybody wants to coo and caw and get the interview for the catch that he made, or for the shot, you know, at the buzzer beater, or at the takeout of slamming the guy into the boards, or of the 475-foot drive from the tee. Right? All of this stuff, and we all of a sudden these people are elevated and stuff because this is the way we perceive glory. Or the person that is, you know, has an earth suit that is very attractive and is on TV all the time and now makes movies and stuff, and we'll go by the droves to watch them. And they become, as we all know, celebrity. This is our perspective. But that is not what God is saying. That is not celebrity. When he speaks of his glory, the idea of glory comes the idea of value, of majesty, of that which is beyond comprehension. And God is saying, I have done these things to show you who I am. Not to get accolades, which is what really the kind of glory that we're talking about is. God doesn't need our accolades. He's God whether or not we clap for him or not. And he's God whether we reject him or not. He's God whether we believe in him or not. See, that's the idea of Godhood. Really doesn't matter. But he's revealed himself in all of these things that we might just go, wow, this is amazing. The character of God is on display. That's God's glory. And that character has been shown and has been revealed to help me. And I think of myself as, you know, as the psalmist said, when I think of man, who is he that you even consider him? We're lower than the angels. We're lower. We're going to see how low we are here in just a few minutes. But you did this and you've done this all for me. That's glorifying God, recognizing that and just going, man. See, that's the glory of God, not the stuck-out chest, celebrity status. No. But that's the world. That's the view the world takes, right? We got movies out there like Irreligious and so on and so forth that portray this. What an arrogant, prideful God that is. That lets the people in Ethiopia starve to death and does all these other things we've talked about so many times. Of course, neglecting the whole idea that steak is everywhere in Ethiopia, but they won't eat it because it's reverenced as a god. Whose fault is that? Anyway, but he gets the blame. They don't glorify him as God. As God, what's the word here? The one, again, is the idea in the Greek. Well, if you're on Wednesday nights, we're learning that God in the Old Testament with a capital G translates the Hebrew word Elohim. When you see it in the New Testament, it translates the Greek word theos and the various, you know, things of it. The idea where we get theory, theology, theocratic, theo, whatever. Okay, that's what the word is. It means God. It means he who is supreme above all others. He has no equal. That's what we're talking about here. So these people, they didn't glorify him. They didn't recognize the value in he who is above all others and is unique in who he is. And was displayed in what he did. So that's the first problem. They knew God, but they didn't glorify him as God. They didn't want to recognize him for that. And not only that, this is an interesting statement, and I kind of wrestle with this. I'm thinking, why would he put this in here? I mean, it makes sense, but he's on such a roll here. And when you're teaching a sermon, you really like the way, you know, if Paul gives you this idea that you can flow with, but all of a sudden we're moving from glory of God to thankfulness. I'm like, what? It kind of just tripped me up, and I'm like, wait a minute. So they didn't glorify God, and they didn't thank him. Well, obviously, if they're not glorifying him, they weren't thanking him. But you know what? Then it hit me as I went through this. You see, what this is ultimately talking about, remember, within the context here, we've had to break it up because of our Sunday morning setting here, but remember that we're within the context of God displaying who he is through creation. See? So they didn't glorify him as God, as the one who simply spoke that which exists into existence. Well, I don't believe that. Well, too bad, he did. Careful, he'll speak you out of existence just as easy. But anyway, but so I'm thinking, wow, this is all within the context of the Lord. And I thought, well, no, they were thankful. But ultimately what you get here is the idea of gratefulness. They were completely ungrateful for that which the Creator has given. And no one could drive around in this creation. We were just talking about this at our elder meeting last week up there in Zion. If you ever think you're really great, Piper was said this once, I really love this statement. If you really think you're something, if you think really big, then go stand on the edge of the Grand Canyon. Find it very quickly, you're really not a whole lot. Because of the majesty of creation. And we were there in Zion looking at the mountains and we just going, oh my gosh, what a tragedy to see this and not see God in all of this. How sad. How sad. And people will come to trek and to do all this stuff, which we should do. Take advantage of God's, be blessed by that. And that's what I think he means. They're not thankful. They're not blessed. There's no gratitude for that which God has created. The beauty within creation. Even fallen creation. Think about that. This goes back to what we were talking. We were like, if the beauty of this, in a fallen sense, remember at the fall, that the curse came across and weeds started coming up and all of that stuff went on in nature. And we know that that's continuing and stuff and everything is not getting better. Like they tell us, it is getting worse. Nothing lasts. It all begins and very quickly it fades. It always does. Second law of thermodynamics, we talked about that. And yet, in the midst of the fall, and all of this turmoil that goes on with disease, and not for just human, but for the animal kingdom, and for the what was it? Not vegetable kingdom, but the green kingdom, there we go, whatever it is, you get the idea, ecology, right? And yet there's this fascinating beauty. Can you imagine what it must have been like prior to the fall? No, we can't imagine. You know how? Because eye hasn't seen and ear hasn't heard. It can't even enter into the heart of men the things that God has prepared for him. There's no way to comprehend what God has done. We try, and that's our problem, and that's the problem we're going to go here with just a few minutes. We try by looking at that which surrounds us, and we sort of equate God to that, and therein lies our problem. Because then God is not glorified who God as God, and we're not thankful for that. Now watch what happens. Don't glorify him, God, and you're not grateful for what he's done in creation. Notice this, in contrast to this, because they didn't do those things, but in contrast to that, they became futile in their thoughts. Right, I told you we started this study, hang on to your seats. Because this clearly is about what we would, you know, the Bible would call the heathen or the pagan, but it also is written to a church. Never lose sight of that. Because we like to think, because we go to church, regardless of what denomination it is, or non-denomination for that matter, that that's what makes it. No. God is not interested in denominations. Never was, is not now, and never will be. It's about Christ, period. End of story. But these people didn't do that, so they became futile in their thoughts. You see? The idea of became here has the idea of, obviously, they weren't there, but they progressed. Now, there's a progression for you. Actually, we could probably call this a digression, couldn't we? They're going in the opposite direction. Because what has been known about God, they're moving in a direction that just doesn't happen to be. So they became futile. What does futile mean? Empty, void, worthless. And you know what the word thoughts means? They became futile, empty, or worthless in their reasoning. This translates it as thoughts. Some of your versions translate it as thinking. But the idea is that of reason. Now, put this back in mind. Remember, we're talking about God. If you're going to stop and think about God, then you have to reason. You got to contemplate. That's the gift of thought that God has given us when he created us. And he gave us a soul, that mind, that will, and that emotional part of us. As truth is received, we process that truth, and then we act on what we believe the truth has presented to us. And we try and we fight to keep the affections in line with that. But these people, because they haven't done these things too, they didn't glorify and they weren't grateful, they became empty in their reasoning. There was nothing to base this reasoning on, you see? Now look at the second thing that leads to. So this idea of futile in their thoughts is a perverted way to think. It's empty reasoning. And remember, perverted means what? Twisted or distorted. Again, in our society, perverted has come to mean something entirely different. But understand what it means from a biblical perspective. It's twisted. It's distorted. So it's a perverted thinking. It's empty reasoning. Notice that's within the person. Now look at the second thing. The second problem with this, because there are four. We're going to see three in this verse and then one in the next. In these two verses and then one in the next. And their foolish hearts were darkened. The idea of foolishness here. You know what the word means? And we're going to see this again when we come to verse 22. Morino. Where do you think we get from that word? Moron. Oh, the Bible speaks like that? You dang right it speaks like that. And our problem is we don't like it to speak like that, so we put little words in there that don't sound so bad. But ultimately what Paul is saying here is, look, because they didn't glorify and they weren't gracious, they became empty in their thinking and their moronic hearts turned dark. Because they acted like morons, that's what ended up happening. Their heart was unable to perceive truth, unable to perceive the reality. It's just this constant downhill slide over and over again. I mean, this is a real circling of the drain, right? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, it just keeps getting worse and worse and picks up speed. And we're going to see that as we move through the rest of this chapter. So their foolish hearts were darkened. So first of all, their thinking was perverted. And therefore empty reasoning. And now their feelings are perverted because the heart is the seat of the emotions. That's ultimately what it's talking about. The intangible part of us that draws all of this together. See? Which can't be seen. The heart. Which is why God gives us a new one at salvation and doesn't fix the old one. Can't fix the old one. The heart is deceitful above all things and is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Literally, who can repair it? Jeremiah. Right? The heart is deceitful above all things and it's desperately wicked. It's in trouble unless you get a new one. But Jesus said, come unto me and I'll give you a new heart. If any man is in Christ, he's a new creation. What's new? You get a new heart, man. You get a new insight. God takes the heart of stone out, boom, throws it away, puts a heart of flesh in there, and then you know what's really cool? Takes up residence there. How awesome is that? Not only did he give us this heart and create this thing in us, and then he said, I think I'm going to move in there. Paul said, don't you know that you're the temple of the Holy Spirit, man? What's the temple? Tabernacle. The place where God dwells. Whoa. That's why we better be careful where we go. What we watch, what we do, what we think, what we say, because the king is living inside. Paul said three times, don't you understand? You're the place where the Spirit of God dwells. Don't you get that? Three times he said that. Man, driving home a point. So their foolish hearts were darkened. So their thinking was perverted. Their feelings or their affections were perverted. And this leads to spiritual blindness. There comes a point, if you continue to reject these things, well, you will no longer be able to perceive truth, no matter what's presented to you. Because your heart has become dark, has become void of understanding. This is what happened to the people of Israel in the wandering through the wilderness, which we're looking at on Wednesday nights in our study of Exodus. We haven't got to the Exodus yet, but we're getting there. Moses is about ready to lead them out of there. But we got to go through the plagues and all that stuff first. But what was happening there? There was God wandering with his people. He promised to take them out, and he did. He delivers them through the Red Sea. Moses wasn't the deliverer. He was in a sense. But it's God that's the deliverer, not Moses. Moses was called of God to lead his people. God is the deliverer. Right? And he leads his people through, and he leads them out there into the wilderness. where you would think nothing could take care of them. But you see, God is shaking the dust of what was represented in Egypt, shaking off the falsehood, the false gods that were created in those worlds, changing everything, showing them that the only value was in Him and His presence and staying close to that presence. And He would lead His people through the wilderness for all of those years. And He would give them food when there was no food, bread. He gives them meat when there was no meat, quail. He gives them water when there was no water from the rock and from Mara and from whatever all these other places are. He continues to do this. And not only that, in daytime, He appears to them in a cloud of smoke and He leads them, the very presence of God with His people, man. And then at night, there was a fire that sat over the temple because in those days, that's where God dwelt, was in the tabernacle. Because, remember, same word, we become the tabernacle. In those days, there was a literal tabernacle. So the fire of God. So all of this presence with God. And yet the people did not enter the promise. What? How can that possibly be? Read Hebrews. It'll tell you. Because they weren't interested in God as God, and they weren't thankful for what God had did, and therefore their thinking became worthless. And they created an image. Aaron, make for us an image. We don't know what's happened to Moses. God bless Moses, right? We don't know what's happened to him. He's supposed to have been back by now, but he ain't back, man. Look at the time. We got to get moving, man. Well, we can't. We need God to lead us. Don't worry about it, Moses. We'll create our own God. One that we're familiar with. This God of Moses, we're not really sure about him anyways. He just brought you through the Red Sea, dude. He's been feeding you. What do you mean you don't know about him? Well, we're not really sure. So let's create a God, right? So they gather everybody's gold. Where did the gold come from? The Egyptians. We learned on Wednesday night when they left, the Egyptians said, here, take this. Get the crud out of Dodge, right? Right? And so they get out there and they take all that stuff and they make this image. And we're going to be talking more about that some. Their foolish hearts were darkened, man. They're watching this. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Profession of wisdom. Modern man is so highly intelligent that he knows all things. Right? That's what they want us to believe. Because they will say, oh, the ancients, it's a marvel that they could build the pyramids and they could do all of these wonderful things. Well, ancient man is a wonderful thing, but let's face it, we're modern man. We can dissect things. We can look at stars billions of miles away. We can do all of these things. We can, you know, we can create, you know, they can't create. They think they can, but they can't. They always say they can, right? You guys heard the joke? Oh, we don't need you anymore, Lord, because you know we've learned to create life. Really, God says, how do you do that? Well, first of all, we take some dirt. God said, whoa, stop there. What? Get your own dirt. See? No, you can't create. You never could. You're not. You can't now, and you're not going to be able to be. I read a quote as I was studying for this little guy, and I can't. I should have brought this. But he was from England. It was a few years back, and he was talking about this. And because of the discovery of DNA, and then ultimately, of course, RNA, and it gets deeper and deeper. And of course, they're telling us that the deeper they find, the more they find, the less it shows God. But the reality of it is, the deeper they go, what are they finding? God. Imagine that. And so they've done all this stuff, and this guy actually gets. You know what I believe? He actually made this statement. I'll get this quote for you if you're interested. He was a British doctor. A scientist, and he said, you know, I really believe with the discovery of these things, within a couple of generations, we'll be able to create life. And therefore, I believe that I've come to the conclusion that I no longer need God. Because modern man is intelligent. We can go to the moon, can't we? We can send them ships out there to Mars, man, send back video. Pretty amazing stuff, isn't it? It is. It really is. How awesome. I'm not knocking that. I think it's cool. I'd love to be there and them images come back. Wouldn't that be it? Not because I would just be going, wow, check that out, man. Do you guys realize we're the first ones to have seen that? And God said, Mars, I want you here. We're the first ones to have seen that. And then all be going, oh, you know, Big Bang Theory. It just happened to sort of spin and sort of stop there. What? Oh, please. Anyway, you see, I'm not knocking this stuff. I think it's really cool, but let's get clear here. We can just go on and on. But that's what happens, you see, when you don't glorify God as God and you're not thankful for His creation. You make up your own God and you profess yourself to be wise, but ultimately you're a moron. That's what it says. Look at it. Professing to be wise, they became, again, they moved, wrong direction. But so we saw that they moved towards empty thinking, but now they've moved to empty thinking leads to a moron. empty-headed, no reasoning, no possibility. So perverted thinking or empty reasoning from within the person, perverted feeling, spiritual blindness, also inward. But notice, perverted wisdom, professing to be wise. They're professing, they're telling other people about how smart they are. And they can do all of this stuff, but they can't control anything, can they? You're a captain of your own soul. You've heard me say this before, because it just really irritates me. You ain't captain of squat. So get over it. None of us knows we're going to be alive 5 minutes from now. None of us. So therefore, you're not in control of anything, is what a captain obviously means. So, perverted thinking, perverted feelings, perverted wisdom. They're without understanding. And they've digressed because of these things into a moronic piece, a sense of mind. Psalm, in the 14th Psalm, makes this incredible statement. And I think it's verse 1. And it says, the fool. The fool, same word, the empty-headed, moron, stupid person. People don't like the word stupid, right? Well, Paul used it. That's really what we're talking about here. That kind of person says there is no God. That's what the scripture says for somebody that believes that. We like to use the terms that we've all been accustomed to, agnostic, atheism, and all the isms, right, that go along with that. But they became fools. Now here's the third one, verse 23, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God. Did you see that? First of all, they've rejected the glory. Now what are they doing with that glory? Changing it. You reject something, but you can't really get rid of it. Because no matter what you do, the heavens still declare the whole glory of God. So therefore, well, we've got to rethink this thing. We've got to come at it from a different angle. And so you change it. You exchange. And the word here, by the way, in some of your translations probably says that, but you can see clearly here in the New King James, it's the word changed. But it literally is exchanged. Because changed gives the idea that it's something new has come in. The idea of exchanged is the idea that one thing has replaced another. And that's really what the context is obviously suggesting. Okay? So because they did these things, they changed the glory of the incorruptible. The incorruptible means eternal, imperishable, unchangeable. That's what it means. That which does not perish. That's why Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 15, and he talks about us as looking for the resurrection, that this corruption, Paul says, must put on incorruption. In other words, this body, which isn't getting better, though I know Marie would argue with that, but this body, which is not getting better, is getting worse. You see, it's corrupting, it's going down, it's decaying, it's not going to last forever. Which makes me wonder why we spend so much time, it's going to happen. Now, exercise, absolutely, I got no problem with that. It's clear I exercise all the time. But you see, that's the idea, that's the incorruptible. But look at what he says, they've exchanged, they've replaced that glory of God. The glory of a God who doesn't change, who doesn't decay, who doesn't decline. They've changed that for what? They've changed it into an image made like corruptible man. And we'll stop there for just a second. Did you catch what Paul just said there? They've changed this glory. They've exchanged God's glory for a glory that they have created based on, notice the two words, an image made like. And God's created man in his image and his likeness. Genesis. See? So what man has done is said, well, we don't really like the idea that God would have done this, so we've got to create something else. And of course, they've come up again with all of their doodads to sort of explain all of this stuff. But you see, that's what's going on here. Now notice that the first two things that we talk about, problems, perverted thinking, perverted feelings, came from within the person. Perverted wisdom, as it was professed to other peoples, was horizontal in its nature. But notice this one now is Godward. This has to do with God. They've changed his glory. They rejected his glory. Now they're changing or they're replacing his glory. Okay? Replacing the glory of the incorruptible God, and they're putting it into the image now and the likeness. Not of God, because they've changed that. But of man. And of course, the worship of man. See? And then look at what else goes on here, and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Notice the digression here as well. Paul starts with the highest of God's creation, man. But people that begin to worship man, humanism, so on and so forth, and all the stuff that goes with humanism, secularism, socialism, capitalism, blah, 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 all the isms. Now, all those things, you see, those don't satisfy a lot of people, so you got to go into something in nature. And of course, now nature takes the foothold, as is what's happening in our society, right? And so now, well, you can't worship man because ultimately you can't worship man because it's obvious man's got some serious problems. He's got some real issues. And they like to blame religion for it, but then you go to countries in this world that really religion doesn't really play a part, and men are still slaughtering men. And this idea that can't we all just get along? No, we can't all just get along. Why? Because the heart is deceitful above all things, and it's desperately wicked. That's mine. That's mine. That's mine. You see it in your children from the day they can talk, right? It's the nature of the beast, so to speak. See? You're not going to change that. And you can come to all sort of peace agreements and do whatever it is that you want to do, but the reality of, look at history. Name one time, at one point in any culture or any empire from the beginning of time as we recognize it, even if you don't recognize the creation, and tell me once where that thought ever worked. One example. It's not there, is it? No. Started in the garden. Abel. I'm going to worship the Lord with the sacrifice that he's required. The lamb of sacrifice for the sin. I ain't doing that, Abel, Cain said. I don't like this idea of God telling us what to do. So you know what? I'm going to grow the crops. And I'm going to work with my hands in the sweat of my brow. And I'm going to harvest those things. And then I'm going to bring my offering to God. And we'll see who's in control, right? Isn't that what happened? That's exactly what happened, Cain and Abel. But God said, no, Abel, this is what I asked. Abel has done the right thing. Cain, why are you doing this, man? I've already explained this to you. This is what Cain says, no, that's not acceptable to me. You take me as I am, Lord. I'm every bit as good as Abel. That's right, you are. But that's not the point. The point is not in who's better, but in how you come to me, you see? And we all know the story. Cain refused to do that and offered this thing, right? And then he runs off and gets Mopey Joe, right? You know, like your kids do when they don't get their way. Or your wife. No, I was going to say husband, but I'm up here, so I've got to save myself, you know? No, you got this. That's what happens. The Drew And so the Lord goes to the Cain and says, listen, I've explained this to you. If you do this, then you and I are going to get along just fine. But if you don't, Cain, you're going to create problems you can't even imagine. And Cain completely rejects it. His foolish heart is darkened. He's changed the glory of God into a corruptible thing. Fruit, for goodness sake. And his ability to produce this. And now he's presented that. And now God is not going to accept him. So what does he do? The same thing that happened in Rwanda. The same thing that's happening in Darfur. The same thing that's happening in Burma. Now these are all current issues. You guys understand. I'm not talking about ancient ones here. The same stuff that's happening in Malaysia. The same stuff that's happening in North and South Korea. Do I need to go on? No. I'm better. I will kill my brother. And that's what he does. And then, of course, he's confronted. What have you done? Of course, God knows what he's done. It's an opportunity for him to come clean, man, to repent. How do I know? I don't know where my brother is. Am I his keeper? Yeah, you are. But, and of course, we know the story. Nothing has changed. Why? Because the heart is deceitful above all things, and it's desperately wicked. No one can understand it. Peace will not work. Period. It hasn't, it isn't, and it won't until the King of Peace returns. Then it will. Then it will. But not until then. So this dreams of utopian society where we're all just can sit together and talk our issues out and please, please. That doesn't happen in a family. Ever had a good dinner thing where you sit around and everybody is on the same page? If you do, I'd like to come to dinner. Please, invite me. Please. That doesn't happen. We can't get along on what teams we like in football, baseball. We can't get along on what makeup is the best to use. I'll never understand. How can there be so many variations of base? Is it base? No, foundation. I thought a foundation was a foundation. How could there be all these variables in foundation? I don't get it. So we can't agree on these kind of things, but we're going to agree in the world set. Come on. No. We're going to change this stuff, and we're going to make God, because we can't do this. We're going to create this God that we all exist. Crud, even within the church, within the United States, we can't agree. This is why we got Methodists and Baptists and American Baptists and Fundamental Baptists and United Methodists and Lutheran and blah, 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 blah. What has happened? We've made God into what we choose for him to be and our interpretation of him. And so we go over here and we say, everybody that thinks like this, come here over here. So everybody runs over there and here, you get your red shirt. And everybody goes, well, I don't agree with that. Everybody that believes with me over here, go over here. I mean, this is, I'm not making fun of this. This is the reality of it. Well, I don't believe really that, and we disagree on this part. So if you agree with me, come over here. And everybody goes over there. Now, here, you guys take your blue shirts. And pretty soon we got all the blue shirts, the red shirts, the yellow shirts, the green shirts, the purple shirts, and blah, 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 running over the place and saying they're all right. So it's easy to look at the world and say the world does this, but the church had better take a long, hard look at itself. All churches. I don't care about denomination. Why? It makes no difference. The standard is this. Period. Not what I think of it, not what you think of it, or what anyone else thinks of it. It is the standard. The problem is when we go to the standard, we don't like what the standard says, so we change it to make it say this. And that's why we're studying the book of Romans. Because we better go back to what we understand. Because as the pressure continues to be applied, all of those red shirts, blue shirts, yellow shirts, green shirts, whatever, they're all going to have to come together, folks. We are going to have to stand arm in arm. Well, I can't stand with that person. Well, you better learn. You better learn. Well, I don't agree. Well, too stinking bad. You know what? Too bad. We're going to have to pull together or we're not going to make it. Going to the mission field. Marie and I were in the mission field. Completely different ministries in our years there in Belize. And Trav and Liz can tell you, Juan and Karen will tell you this. Everybody's on their own little boat out there. And it's not until you realize that, folks, you know what? We're not on individual boats. We're on the same boat. And we're all these individual boats. If one of us happens to fall out or somebody starts shooting at us, you know, then nobody's there for a rescue. We better get in the same boat. All this nonsense of denominationalism that you see in the city of Mesquite, let's just leave the rest of it alone. And there are variations. Don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that there aren't. But you find very quickly out there that to survive, you better trust those people in the red shirts. Because they ain't your enemy. That's your brother and sister over there, man. Yeah, you may not get along any more than a family sitting around a table gets along, but you are brothers and sisters. Get over it. And so this is the stuff that's going on. But look at what they're worshiping. So they started man. Now notice how it goes downhill. But not just man, because man, we all know, we've already discussed, he's got some serious problems. So let's go for the birds then. So we'll make things where we worship birds. I mean, after all, they're so beautiful in flight, and there's so many, so varied. Quetzales there in Belize, actually was in Guatemala, but there's this bird that has this enormous tail thing. I don't know if you guys have ever seen pictures of them. Oh, let's worship those. They're so beauty. The toucan. Everybody wants to see a toucan. I don't want to see a toucan. Have you been around a toucan? Them things are obnoxiously loud. They'll drive you nuts. Well, they look pretty through binoculars. Fine, I'm good with that. I wrote a picture in a book. I love that. Don't want them out in the tree in the yard. I chase them off because they're loud. They're annoying. First get to Belize and all the parrots are flying over, right? Pairs, flying pairs, and usually they're in greed. The first time you're there, and what, like 5 o'clock in the morning, man, they'll fly. What direction they fly? East in the morning or west? West, because they went east. Yeah, in the evening. So they fly over at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And you first get up in the jungle there, and you look up, and there's the parrots. Rah, 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 rah. They're so loud, right? There's like 100 of them. And they're flying over, and you just go, wow, cool. Parrots. Wow. That's awesome. And you're all starting to feel all National Geographic and stuff, you know? Whoa. Check that out. And about a week later, you're going, stinking parrots. Because they just yak so loud. And then the third week, it's parrots. No, I'm just kidding. But the worship of birds, we didn't shoot any birds, please. We didn't shoot any birds, I promise. But that's what happens. The worship of these things that seem are really not as they seem. They're creation. But it doesn't stop there. Four-footed animals. Well, the birds, they can be obnoxious. So let's worship cows. They're kind of quiet. Right? Come to Kathmandu with me. next time. So that when you're in a restaurant eating, and they're not cows there, they're the water buffalo or whatever, and you're eating your lunch, and all of a sudden everybody just clears the street because these water buffalo are walking right down the middle. Traffic stops, nobody does anything. That stupid cow walks in the restaurant and is sniffing my food. And you can't thunk it, kick it, bite it, chase it. You can't do anything because it's a sacred animal. Well, then we don't want to worship cows either then. Well, where they will in certain places. We certainly can't kill them because it could be Uncle Harvey, right? So we can't do that. So then let's, okay, well, if we can't do birds, we can't do man because he's a flake. Birds are obnoxious. Cattle, well, they're just kind of messy because they don't really care when they come into a restaurant where they sort of do their business. You know what I'm saying? They don't really care. So they'll walk in there. So let's go to the creeping things. Well, at least we got the creeping things. What are the creeping things? Stuff that got me on my knee because it was inside my shorts there in Belize. Scorpions. Oh, yeah. Or the time Marie blamed me for throwing this tarantula on her. When I wasn't, I was just protecting myself. It was in my pants, man. I looked down and went, yeah. And she happened to be standing there. It's not my fault. But people will worship tarantulas, man. They'll worship these scorpions. They'll worship snakes. Look around the world. You can see it everywhere. But you see, that's what happens to the man who will not glorify God. Fail or choose not to worship the Creator, God as Creator, then you will choose to worship creation as your God. And that's exactly what has happened. Choose to worship your ideology, and ultimately it will lead you to worship your idol. That's what's going to happen. We have to stop this, folks. We've got to come to terms with it. God is God, and He will be worshipped the way He has demanded it. My interpretation, your interpretation, and as I've said 1,000 times, lose the idea, well, that's your interpretation, because we're really not talking about interpretation, we're talking about opinion. Because the Word of God says what it means and means what it says. When it's interpreted, you can't change that to your perspective, to your prejudice, or to your presupposition. You must take it as it comes, which is why I study it and teach it the way that I do. Because it says what it means. I don't like what it says many times, but it says what it says. So what is the ultimate answer to this? Jesus Christ. The ultimate answer to God, to man's failure and warped worship was that God took on flesh and came down here and says, I'm going to fix all this. If you guys will just trust me, I'll get it done for you. And so He sent Christ. And He lived that life, which He Himself said in that 17th chapter of the Gospel of John, Father, glorify yourself in me, and these people glorify me so that ultimately I glorify you. In other words, recognize your worth, your honor, all of these things. And so, when we, on the first of every month, when we do communion, what are we ultimately doing? We're recognizing the glory of our God as it was on display most clearly. Not in just the manifestation of God and who He is clearly seen, obviously, in the universe and in creation. But it is ultimately seen in Jesus Christ. Want to know about God? Don't look at the stars, man. They'll show you what He is, but they won't show you who He is. Want to know who He is? Look at Jesus. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father, Philip. Because I'm the Father or one. Before Abraham was, I am. We can't understand that because we always want to make God fit our version of things, don't we? Well, that can't possibly be. Well, it can't possibly be within this realm. No, it can't. You're right. As if God is bound by this realm. Clearly, He's not. So when Jesus came and He did this, He was bringing honor and glory to the Father. And when we come to Him and through the recognition of what He did and the remembrance, as He said, whenever you do this, you're going to remember me. You're going to proclaim my death and my burial. See?